Welcome back to the second half hour of Current State. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. Coming up, a chat with the new top cop at one of Mid-Michigan's largest cities.
Once you have trust, you have mutual respect, and you can go on and you can accomplish anything.
Also, a pair of Mid-Michigan talented twins. They've already won one reality show and are back in the national spotlight.
Build the fashion arena that Lansing can be.
And you'll meet the man who's piloted one of the Great Lakes' spectacular sites for three decades.
So what I'm trying to anticipate before the current makes my vote go one way or the other.
But first, the next time you're at Lansing City Hall, you will see the building has been renamed in honor of former Mayor David Hollister. The ceremony last week attracted a large crowd of Hollister's family, friends, political allies, and even his one-time adversaries. WKAR's Scott Pohl was there.
With that, the new David C. Hollister City Hall sign was unveiled in honor of the man who led Lansing from 1994 to 2003. Those years were the culmination of decades of service that included time as a teacher at Lansing Eastern High School, an Ingham County commissioner, a state representative, and a State Department director. Hollister says he never expected an honor like having a building named for him.
I tried to exit quietly off the stage when I retired, and I'm trying to keep a somewhat lower profile. But people are very appreciative of it's really five decades of service.
Current Mayor Virge Brunero cited Hollister's accomplishments, such as bringing minor league baseball to Lansing and starting the Common Ground Music Festival.
And of course, two new state-of-the-art General Motors auto plants that continue to serve as one of the pillars of our regional economy. Failure was not an option. And his success is perhaps Dave's greatest legacy.
Lansing City Council member Carol Wood says that when Hollister was mayor, his door was always open.
You know, when you look at what he's done for the Lansing community and how he has made a true difference for us based on the economy, based on, you know, his years of service, I am really blessed to be able to be part of the process today.
When Hollister was elected mayor in the 1993 election, the man he beat was then-mayor Jim Crawford. Crawford had served as mayor for a year after the resignation of his predecessor, Terry McCain. Looking back on it, Crawford thinks the voters of 1993 made the right choice.
In my household, we kind of believe we won when we lost. You know, we are all meant to do certain things, and you know, for me, I think it was the Lord's will. I'd be there for a year, and just for a year, and then he opened up new doors that for my family and I has been just wonderful. So, yeah, I don't look at, never have looked at politics that way. I think every time I've won or lost an election, the person I either lost to or beat have become good friends, and that's the way it should be. That's what's maybe missing in governance today in our society is too much fighting that never ends.
The city is trying to sell the City Hall building, but the Hollister name will adorn any future new City Hall in Lansing. Let's give David Hollister the final word on Monday's ceremony.
There aren't words that can describe people enthusiasm and warmth, and it's very comforting and moving and humbling, and a perfect day at the high school band here. Falls in the air. People are hopeful. It's getting better now.
For Current State, this is Scott Pohl.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Ooh, 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 yeah.
And the music you're hearing is Elvis, of course. That song came out in 1957, which was WKAR Radio's 35th year on air. East Lansing is changing police chiefs, but it's nothing to get all shook up about. I sat down with the new top cop just a few days ago. Joining us now is the new police chief of East Lansing, Larry Sparks, and welcome and congratulations.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me here today.
What is your first priority as chief of police in East Lansing?
My first priority is community outreach. I feel that you have to be engaged with your community. The best decisions are collective decisions, especially when they involve quality of life issues. Everybody coming together, bringing all their ideas to the table, and we'll find out what the best solution is. And so community outreach, I think, is a cornerstone of any police agency, certainly East Lansing, and it is absolutely my priority. We've tried to increase transparency. We put our policy and procedures online so that people can view them. They'll understand or at least have an opportunity to review why we do what we do. We think that's huge. We are in the process of implementing a new body camera system. And what we're going to do is we're going to not only review those videos, we're going to keep a database of those videos. And at some point, we're going to release the demographics of every traffic stop, who's being stopped, why they're being stopped, where they're being stopped. We want to increase transparency. I think that's one of the first undertakings that has already started that I want to continue. And you'll see that, you know, in the first quarter, I hope, of 2018.
You've been a part of this force for 30 years. You know, some say, you know, they would look forward after 30 years to retirement, maybe perhaps, or taking life a little bit easier. But you've decided to move into the top job. Why did you seek this position out?
I started preparing for this position about 30 years ago. This is my dream job. I feel a renewed sense of energy for this position. And I think the former chief, Jeff Murphy, laid a nice foundation. He put a nice first story on the building. I want to put a second, a third story, and maybe a couple outbuildings. I think that there's work to be done here, and I'm prepared to do it.
East Lansing is a city of 48,000, and you have Michigan State University right there. How do you meet the challenge of being in a city with a large university?
Well, first of all, I think you embrace it. The university brings a lot of life to our city. Game days are really nice. It's a nice atmosphere. What we want to do is continue that. We want to make sure that everyone is safe. But I think it brings energy to the downtown. It brings energy to the city. And to be quite frankly, without the university, our community would be very different. I embrace it, and I think that it brings a lot to the table.
What is the biggest challenge facing policing, either in your department or nationwide?
I think you have to establish trust. And I think we've seen that across the United States. You establish trust, maybe sometimes one person at a time, but it starts with communication. Communication's everything. If you're talking to people, you're sharing information with them, you're getting to know them, they're getting to know you, I think that goes a long way towards establishing trust. Once you have trust, you have mutual respect, and you can go on and you can accomplish anything that you set out to accomplish as a group. And that's where we're going at the East Lansing Police Department.
You know, here at WKR News, we've covered the transition that East Lansing has made from, you know, what they used to call Sundown Town to being an extremely diverse community. How does the police department meet the needs of having to address that diversity?
Well, again, we embrace diversity. I think it's great for the community. It's one of the reasons why I want to move to East Lansing. I think it brings a lot to the community. But one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to actually try to make our police department reflect the community that it serves. We're going to go out and do some recruiting, and we expect that we'll accomplish that. And that's one of my priorities as the chief of East Lansing Police.
Is there any stats you can share with us?
Since 2010, 48% of our new hires as police officers have had minority status. Now, that does include women. So the stats are, while they are very good, I believe there's room for improvement, and we're certainly working very hard to accomplish that.
We're talking with the new police chief of East Lansing, Larry Sparks. In addition to serving on the police department, you play an important role in the Shiawassee community of Lanesburg. Tell us about that.
Well, it's basically a role that I've watched my entire family play. My father was the fire chief in Lanesburg for about 20 years following his retirement as captain of the East Lansing Fire Department. And my mother was a city clerk in Lanesburg for 34 years. I thought that there were two Sparkses involved. There might as well be a third. And so I joined the fire department and have been with that department for 30 years. I've served in many different capacities, most recently as chief for the last 4 years. I am actually stepping down from that position tonight. I've decided that I want to devote all of my time to the East Lansing Police Department. I feel this is a full-time job that requires a full-time commitment. But in addition to the fire department in Langsburg, I've been a mayor pro tem twice. I've been a mayor. I was the youngest mayor ever elected to the Langsburg City Council at the age of 30. And in addition to that, I've continued to serve on the council. I have about 14 years of service currently and serve as the chairman of the police committee. And I'm also on the finance and labor relations committee.
So the Sparks family is really a big part of the history of that community.
Yeah, it dates back to the early 50s when my grandfather was the police chief there, and he was killed prior to me being able to meet him before I was born. He was in a car accident, and I still have his badge, and I think that was probably the beginning of my inspiration to be a police officer and certainly follow in his footsteps.
Langsburg is about 1,300 people. What is special about this community?
Well, it's a tight-knit community, but it goes back to trying to accomplish some of the things I want to accomplish here. People communicate with each other. If you leave and you tell somebody, your neighbor, that you're going to be gone, they're going to be watching your property, or they're going to be watching your kids. I can remember as a kid when I first got my driver's license that I needed to be very careful how I drove in Langsburg because information would be back to my parents before I was home. And it's that kind of community. People respect each other. There's mutual respect, trust. And I just think it says a lot about a group of people that come together. If there's a problem, they come together and they resolve it collectively. And that's what I want to do here.
How does living in a small Michigan community like Lanesburg compare to living somewhere larger like East Lansing or Lansing?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that when you live in a small community, although it's great to know everybody and have everybody there to help you, anytime you really want to do something or expand your horizons, you're 25 to 40 minutes away. When you live in a community that is diverse and brings a lot to the table, there's many different things that you can do. You know, I was out walking while I'm looking for houses here in town, and the trail system here is outstanding. Now, I've patrolled it as an officer, but I see it in a different way as a resident. And I think that's one of the reasons why I want to live here as police chief. You know, I'm walking the trail and I'm seeing it for the first time as a potential resident and seeing what this community has to offer. When you walk on the campus of Michigan State University and you walk down the river trail, I mean, some of the best views around. It's fantastic. And I just think that there's a lot of recreational opportunities here. There's a lot of civic opportunities here. And I'm really looking forward to being a resident.
Is there one moment that stands out in your 30 years of service, you know, to East Lansing that, you know, or a case that, you know, really sticks in your mind, good or bad?
I've had many cases that have stuck in my mind. Some have been quite tragic. I think some of the celebrations that we've had here in years past that didn't go so well stick in my mind. But you know what sticks in my mind even more importantly, is how we move past that. It's no longer an expectation that you come here to have those kind of behaviors. You come here to get an education. You come here to have a good time. And that's what we want you to have. But you're not here for those other purposes. I think the last few years we've seen quite a change in the student body. And I really embrace that concept.
Well, thank you for joining us. Larry Sparks, the new East Lansing Police Chief.
Thank you very much.
And he is swearing in. Will be August 25th at 2 p.m. at the East Lansing Public Library.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day,
there's no mistaking that natural woman, Michigan's Aretha Franklin. That hit came out in 1967, the same year WKAR Radio turned 45 years old. The new season of Project Runway is underway, and a pair of twins from Grand Ledge are trying to win over judges with their colorful designs and personalities. They've already racked up a few glamorous wins already. Morning Edition host Brooke Allen introduces us.
When you think fashion, you think New York, Paris, Milan, and Lansing. Yeah, that's right, Lansing. There are designers right here who are revamping the fashion scene. Twins Sean and Claire Butendorf wanted to do something big.
We decided, we wanted to do something very exciting for our birthday. We weren't big partiers. So we said, let's do something we like. Let's go see Katy Perry in concert. We're going to turn 21 once. Let's buy meet and greet tickets.
And then a spark of inspiration hit.
Since we were studying fashion design at Lansing Community College, we thought, what better time to make some great outfits for ourselves?
And then again.
Well, if we're going to meet Katy Perry, how about we make her one? How fun would that be?
Fast forward 6 months, and the twins created an outfit based on Perry's 2011 California Dreams Tour and gifted it to her as planned.
She wore it over 25 times. And then from there, you know, we got this ball rolling. We interned with the fashion designer Betsy Johnson in that summer and fall. And while we were there, we gave Katy Perry another outfit, which both ended up appearing in her movie, in Nylon Magazine. We then got a spread for ourselves in Teen Vogue Magazine, started dressing some other young musicians and celebrities. And then made it on to VH1's Twinning.
Twinning is a reality show that puts 12 pairs of identical twins through a series of physical and mental challenges for a big cash prize of $222,222.22, of which they won, by the way. The twins' gritty yet fun and bright clothing also has been worn by groups like Little Mix and Nervo. And though a story like this might seem like a rare stroke of luck for a Lansing fashion designer, John Lewis, the chairman and managing partner at the New York and Detroit-based Project I, begs to differ.
Absolutely. And the greater Michigan area. You know, I'm from Michigan and was raised here. But and even though I've been in New York all these years, I've kind of kept an eye on the Michigan fashion ecosystem. And it's really grown to a level where it can truly be part of the national narrative with New York and Los Angeles.
And that's what Project I is about, bringing to life the emerging ideas of designers on par with those from major cities.
Project I is a venture capital fund that focuses on early stage fashion apparel companies, companies that have a disruptive, you know, business model that takes advantage of a rapidly changing retail landscape.
That disruptive business model means a shift away from the age-old brick-and-mortar shop and into a digital experience. That gives the twins the option of mobility. They've shown their fashion in Michigan and New York and hope to go to Los Angeles eventually, but maybe not yet. Locally, Project I's offices are found downtown at The Runway, Lansing's fashion incubator.
It's been wonderful partnering with The Runway in the time that we've been in Michigan, not only helping other young designers further their careers, but just working with other designers and working with the other committee members with The Runway to help build the fashion arena that Lansing can be, as well as, you know,
and Michigan
continue to further our brand, you know, in a positive way.
Know who that girl is? Madonna of Rochester Hills, Michigan. She was well on her way to becoming a household name when that hit debuted in 1987, the same year WKAR Radio marked its 65th year. The Lansing City Council is trying to regulate medical marijuana facilities, and as WKAR News reported back in May, it's even unclear how many dispensaries and production units are in the city. WKAR's Katie Cook attended a public hearing where it seems the city has a long way to go.
The 10th floor of Lansing City Hall was packed for Monday night's City Council meeting. On the agenda was a public hearing for the current draft of the city's medical marijuana ordinance. Nearly 30 people weighed in on the ordinance during public comment, with a wide range of perspectives and opinions on medical marijuana.
I would not be standing here in front of you today were it not for medical marijuana in the city of Lansing.
The belief that these shops create improved economy is very dubious.
I do benefit from a dispensary as I'm a landlord of one. And if I didn't have them, I'm afraid I'd have a vacancy.
In one four-block stretch of Cedar Street, there are 7 marijuana businesses.
We don't have a problem with marijuana. We have a problem with opioids. Put a marijuana dispensary on every corner, please.
There was one common thread, however. Most people who spoke do not want the current version of this ordinance to pass. Some feel it is too restrictive on marijuana facilities, while others don't think it's tough enough. The ordinance will now go back to the Committee of the Whole for further discussion by the City Council. For WKAR News, I'm Katie Cook.
August 16th marked 30 years since a horrific air accident in Detroit. There was only one survivor in the crash of Northwest Flight 255. This year, the families of the victims came together to remember their loved ones. WKAR's Carell Vega reports.
A vigil was held this week at the site of the deadliest plane crash in Michigan history.
This was the scene near the Detroit airport where a Northwest Airlines jet crashed moments after takeoff last night, killing at least 154 people.
There's this, you wouldn't believe it. It was just totally destroyed.
Northwest Airlines Flight 255 crashed shortly after taking off from the Detroit Metropolitan Airport on August 16, 1987. The crash killed 156 people, including all 6 crew members. 56-year-old Tony Zanger is one of the organizers of the vigil. Zanger lost his brother and his soon-to-be sister-in-law in the crash.
It's about, basically for us, it means honoring and remembering our loved ones.
The annual vigil takes place at the site of the accident, a memorial built between Interstate 94 and Middlebelt Road in Romulus. Zanger says family members of the victims of the crash were instrumental in creating the monument.
We raised the funds for much of the monument that we had erected at the former crash site.
Along with building a monument to honor those lost on Northwest Flight 255, the victims' families helped in introducing a law to help other families affected by aviation disasters.
Well, we joined with other air crash family groups to help develop the Aviation Disaster Family Assistance Act of 1996, which guarantees more humane and organized and systematic treatment of family members in the event of an air accident.
Zanger says the vigil can be very therapeutic for the family members who attend.
You know, we've become extended family for each other, I think, because we shared a common bond. And, you know, we deal with this 365 days a year. I mean, we don't grieve 365 days a year, but it's a part of our lives.
The vigil concluded at 8:46 p.m., the time of the original crash, with the reading of the victims' names. 4-year-old Cecilia Sheehan was the sole survivor of Flight 255. Zanger says she has never attended the vigils. For WKAR News, I'm Carell Vega.
Now, let's take you to one of the biggest attractions in the Great Lakes region. Rod McDonald has seen a lot in his 29 years piloting tour boats at Niagara Falls. Here at WKAR, we team up with our partners at Great Lakes Today to bring you stories from all around our region. Dave Rosenthal takes us into the Maid of the Mist wheelhouse to chat with a captain who shows thousands of tourists each year this worldwide wonder.
Maid of the Mist.
On most summer days, you'll find Captain Rod McDonald here in the Maid of the Mist wheelhouse. It's a few steps up from the top deck and the hundreds of tourists in blue rain slickers. The room's loaded with all sorts of equipment, a depth finder, rudder indicator, and compass. And on the counter, McDonald keeps a candy jar.
And I have my little chocolates for any little kids out on the deck who are crying or being scared. I used to go with some chocolate.
That's just one of the tips you learn working the Niagara River for 29 years. McDonald grew up on the Canadian side of the Great Lakes and got his start working on fuel barges. But he wanted a more stable life than his father, a captain on Lake Freighters. So when the Mate of the Mist had an opening, he applied. He was only in his mid-20s, but got the job.
The difference here is the cargo talks to you. On the lakes, the other place, the cargo doesn't talk to you.
Now McDonald's a trim 55-year-old with wavy gray hair, and he figures he's made the short run to the falls about 70,000 times. He's seen a lot over the years, like the man who went over Horseshoe Falls on a jet ski.
With the jet ski, he can read in front of us and then right beside us. So, we threw a life ring and all, but still, by the time we got to him, it was just too late because it's not like a bus or a truck where you can pull over and park, right?
That's a tragic reminder about the power of the falls. But McDonald isn't one to get complacent, especially when his boat's at the base of Horseshoe Falls. On each trip, he holds it there for 5 minutes so the tourists can get a good look and feel the spray. Above the crowd, McDonald keeps his hands on the upright wooden wheel. It's the kind you've seen in pirate movies. And he keeps his eyes on the current.
With this wheel, I can feel the current, which way I'm going to go. So what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to anticipate before the current makes my boat go one way or the other. So I'm trying to read it before it happens.
Even though the current's running at about 10 knots and shifting, he barely moves the wheel.
So we always call it, if you're a lazy wheelsman, you're doing a good job. So it takes very little wheel. When you do a lot of wheeling, you're not reading the current very well.
He says it takes most pilots about 5 years to get comfortable on the river. Even then, it pays to be careful.
Well, we treat every trip like our first trip. We have a lot of respect for this river. Because when you don't respect it, that's when you get yourself in trouble.
McDonald wants to make a good impression on the tourists, and there are a lot of them. Last year, the Mate of the Mist carried some 1.6 million passengers.
I enjoy hearing everybody out in the back end of the boat in the front end, smiling and laughing, having a great time. And then we get back to the dock, I see the smiles on their face. That's what makes my day. And that's why we come to work.
With a new load of passengers, he points his boat upriver again. He'll give them an up-close look at the falls and another smooth, safe ride. This is Dave Rosenthal for Great Lakes Today in Niagara Falls, New York.
That's it for this weekend's Current State. Our contributors this week are Brooke Allen, Katie Cook, Jamie Paisley, Scott Pohl, Dave Rosenthal, and Shayna Roth. The station manager at WKAR Radio is Peter Ward. Our general manager is Susie Elkins. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. You can always find Capital Region stories and your latest forecast 24/7 at WKAR.org. Thank you for listening. We're sending you out with Despacito, featuring Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee. It is the hot summer song on this WKAR Radio's 95th anniversary.
Despacito, vamos a hacerlo en una playa en Puerto Rico, hasta que las olas griten ay bendito, para que mi sello se quede contigo.